We're very pleased to be joined right now by Doug Deacon, who, of course, is a regular part of our roundtable and a guy who is, I know, enjoyed himself a little bit this offseason playing some golf. How's that going?
It's going good. Got one trip down, got another one coming on Monday, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, looking very tan, by the way, as you were in this. I know you haven't been around Ohio a lot in this studio being so tan. But anyway, Doug, I want to start with DeQuell Jackson. He gets that contract extension, and really it's a deal that, of course, makes perfect sense because he was an outstanding player, performed so well last season after missing those previous 2 years with injuries. But it's also a great thing to see for one of the real good guys on this football team.
Yeah, not only is he an outstanding player, he's an outstanding person, and he's a guy that gives back to the community. He's a guy that is a good guy in the locker room. He's a guy that you can count on. He's almost like a player coach out there. He works very hard at it, and he's gone through some frustrating times for a couple years not being able to play, then coming back and, you know, having a great season, a Pro Bowl-type season. And I think, you know, sometimes when players don't get a chance to play, they get a greater appreciation of what it is to be able to play. And I think DeQuell showed that last year with the way he played. And, you know, you see guys sometimes when they get hurt, they take off and they just don't get involved. DeQuell was over here and he was involved the whole two seasons that he wasn't able to play. And I think it benefited him quite greatly last year.
And people lead in different ways. Some are more vocal than others. DeQuell is capable of being a vocal guy, but that's really not his MO. He's a guy who just shows you by example and I think quietly encourages others, especially the younger players, to follow his work ethic, which is study a lot of film. He talked about this yesterday, that this offseason, one of the big things he wanted to do once guys were getting back to town is get them together and really drill into watching tape.
Dave Adolph, who used to coach here, used to have a saying, do you want to be a professional football player or do you want to be a professional that plays football? And I think DeQuell Jackson is a professional that plays football.
That's a great way to put that. And going along those lines, adapting to a new defense, to have the switch from the 3-4 to the 4-3, to have Dick Geron's approach to things, which are very different than those previously of Rob Bryan as defensive coordinator here, that took some doing. When you watch DeQuell make the conversion to that, transition to that, what were some of the things that stood out to you, Doug, as far as how well he was able to apply that?
Well, Phil Taylor and Ottavio Rubin were the two things that stood out. But I mean,
didn't hurt.
Anytime you get two big bodies that can play in front of you, that definitely helps. But, you know, DeQuell, you know, he studies the game. He understands it. He's one of those guys that can anticipate what an offense is doing, and that makes him a step ahead of the game. And, you know, this is a game of quickness, and DeQuell, I think, has shown that he's taken advantage. You know, he might not be the biggest middle linebacker in the league, but, you know, by mentally being able to match up with the different quarterbacks and the different offenses, I think he's shown that he can play that big.
And it seems that the range that a middle linebacker needs to have, right, that ability to cover a lot of ground is well-suited for a guy who runs as well as he does.
Yeah, and I mean, DeQuell obviously had some arm problems, but he didn't have any leg problems. And DeQuell has always been one of those guys that has the quickness and the speed to you know, really accelerate into the hole. And the fact that, you know, mentally he's on top of the game, that makes him even quicker, because so often you see a lot of young guys that are thinking and instead of reacting, where DeQuell can react because of his knowledge of the football game.
And again, talking about this from the perspective of a former player, when an organization takes care of a key guy, takes care of a guy that's obvious to take care of, and when you think about this, and it's not always that simple to look at it, but he's a guy who was inherited by this regime, by the Mike Holmgren, Tom Heckert regime, and Pat Shurmur comes in as a new coach, and Dick Geron comes in as a new defensive coordinator. A lot of times, those guys who are from the previous regime or regimes can get overlooked or treated like, well, really, you're not a guy we brought in, so they don't get embraced, right? This particular regime saw that immediately in DeQuell what they had, and I just think that that's another added plus, that it shows you that regardless of where you came from and how you got here, if you're a good player, a good guy, a good example, good locker room guy, that it's going to, you know, that you're going to get your payoff in the end.
Yeah, I think, you know, we saw that when Bill Belichick came in. All of a sudden we saw Mike Johnson and Clay Matthews end up going elsewhere. And, you know, with DeQuell, I think, you know, he understands that, you know, this is an opportunity. And, you know, with that said, you know, he earned it because he kept himself in shape even though, you know, he had the injury problems.
Right.
And when the time came to turn the green light on, you know, he was 100%. And, yeah, you have to be on the same page and not fight the new regime that comes in. And you have to embrace what they're trying to do. And if a player goes in with an open mind and not saying, well, I'm only doing this, you know, I did it this way, I did it that way, and not be flexible in your thinking, you know, your tenure is not going to be too long. And DeQuell is a very smart football player. You know, just as we've said before, you won't find better people.
He is the Browns analyst on the Browns Radio Network, Doug Deacon, joining us, and, of course, former standout offensive lineman for the Browns. And, Doug, when we look at how this signing, this big piece of the puzzle with DeQuell Jackson, having that in place, how it would impact the rest of what the Browns look at in free agency, first, internally, you have Phil Dawson, you have Peyton Hillis, but also externally, you can look at other positions. Linebacker is now something. Middle linebacker, you would cross off that list. And I don't know if they ever were going to lose DeQuell because maybe the worst case scenario was he would have been franchise tagged, so they would have had a 1-year solution on him. But just your thoughts on how this impacts the rest of what this team does free agency wise.
Well, I think we all agree that, you know, one of the problems is the depth at the linebacker position. So now you can, you know, start looking for backups rather than starters. And I think it also encourages other guys in free agency because, you know, those guys that have been associated with DeQuell know what kind of person he is and what kind of football player he is. And he's the kind of guy that, you know, you want to be around. You know, he's a solid guy. He's a guy that you know what you're going to get every Sunday. You're going to get 100%. And I think it's, you know, just a big plus to put your core people under contract for, you know, long term. They did it with Joe Thomas. And,
right.
You know, obviously Joe, five years, five Pro Bowls. That speaks for itself. And DeQuell, you know, he got shortchanged last year over in Hawaii. But, you know, that's sometimes because of the reputation of others rather than the production.
Yeah, you're right about that. And then you look at, again, what this team might be able to do now. There's a franchise tag available. Maybe that's applied to a Phil Dawson again, or maybe not, depending on what they do. But, you know, there are at least they can proceed with some freedom, I guess, or a sense of luxury that, hey, we can do some different things with these people. And then the draft becoming part of this, too. How you look at those positions that need to be addressed based on what you do or don't do in free agency.
Yeah, it's the domino effect. I mean, once you get you know, your core people lined up, then you have an idea of what you want to do in free agency and, you know, who might be available, which will kind of dictate your draft board sometimes. So, you know, anytime you can get good young players and you've got a Tava Rubin, that's just a great player up front, Phil Taylor, who's got a tremendous upside. Shear had a great year. So you got some of that front seven. You know, the other part, though, is Chris Gokong. You know, you brought him in, and he showed that not only can he play the weak side, he can play the strong side. So you have flexibility within your linebackers. And, you know, Scott Fujita, unfortunately, has been hurt the end of the last two seasons. But, you know, you also know you got to look to the future and, you know, build some depth there. So, you know, it gives them a little more definition, I think, when they go into the draft.
Do you like some of these moves that this team has made from a coaching staff standpoint? Of course, you bring in Brad Childress as the new offensive coordinator. That's the biggest one. But it looks like they found a good, solid replacement for Jerome Henderson, who had done a nice job as secondary coach by bringing in Tim Houck to replace him. And Nolan Cromwell joins the staff. I know you know Nolan from his playing days. And just your thoughts on what's some of these tweaks and changes to the coaching staff.
Well, I think, you know, you're bringing in people that players can relate to. And, you know, I remember Nolan Cromwell as a safety. He was a great safety, and he was a guy that just played hard. And when you get somebody like that that has that voice of experience, and when they say something, it means something because they've been there and done that, I think it adds a lot of value to it.
All right, we are just getting started here with Doug Deacon. We've got much more to talk about. We're going to get into what he thinks about some of the offensive linemen that the Browns might be looking at for the draft ahead and the combine, the performances there, RG3 and company. So we'll hit that as we continue on with Cleveland Browns Daily. It's driven by Liberty Ford and brought to you by Madden NFL 12 in stores now. EA Sports, it's in the game. Back with Doug Deacon from the Browns Radio Network and a regular here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Doug, the combine just wrapping up today, but the headlines, as usual, center around quarterbacks. And the biggest, I guess, would be with Robert Griffin III and how well he ran. That 4.38 40 really stood out. Even though people knew he was fast, I guess when you attach a number like that to it for a quarterback, pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to see him have to run that fast,
right,
obviously, and you know, but he's a tremendous athlete, and his position in the draft is probably going up instead of down, which is a good thing for him. It's a bad thing for the Browns because that means the price tag could be higher. And, you know, when you get into a draft and if you start to mortgage your future by giving away draft picks, sometimes, you know, you miss the big picture, which is, you know, the other 21 guys that you're going to put out in the field as starters. So, you know, I think, you know, Tom Heckert and his people are going to have to take and say, is this the value of, you know, what they right. want for him? Are we going to get that back? And can we afford to, you know, give away some of our future to get that? And so far, Tom Hecker's done a heck of a job making good decisions.
He really has. And you're right about that. The common reaction about RG3's performance, and he didn't throw the ball, so this is like, it's pretty interesting that his stock does have a definitive sense of rising, even though he didn't pick up a football and throw it for the personnel people and scouts to see there. But measuring at 6'2 plus was a big deal, and you heard more and more, not just media people, but football people say it was important to have that established. And then going out and running what he did, and you know, you said it too, that you don't want him to have to run, but you can also see creatively how you build in plays that have him take the ball, and I could just envision him blowing past a lot of those defenders at a moment when you say, okay, is it, can you pick up the big throw on third down? Well, now they flushed him, and boom, he's gone.
Yeah, it gives you a lot of flexibility in your offense. It gives you, you know, makes defense have to defend an extra person when you've got a running quarterback. I guess the question then comes, you know, how many really running quarterbacks have won Super Bowls? And probably the only guy would be Steve Young that I can think of for the most part that, you know, was a
true
good running quarterback.
Yeah.
But, you know, Steve was also a very, you know, good passer too. So,
right.
You know, I think, you know, the game has evolved a little bit with the more athletic quarterback. But with that said, you know, you want to see the Super Bowl rings on those guys so that you know that that's the direction that's going to be the future of the NFL.
Yeah, to a certain degree, I'll say with Ben Roethlisberger, he's not your classic runner, but he is a guy who moves a lot and improvises a lot on the move. And as much as that might be just Ben's thing, and I'm not sure how many other quarterbacks duplicate that all that well, but I can envision this guy being somewhat like that because of his you know, remarkable quickness and then having an arm to go with it.
Yeah, and I mean, then comes the discipline. Do you take off and run, or do you sit and wait for somebody to come open? And, you know, there's a fine line because, you know, a lot of guys have a tendency to, you know, get some nervous feet back there and take off because they know they can run. But by the same token, you know, the NFL game is now involved into a pass-first game, and that's, you know, what you're looking for in a quarterback.
And the quarterback conversation in this draft, of course, isn't complete unless you bring up Andrew Luck's name, the presumptive top overall pick of the Colts. He goes and runs a 4.6 40, which, and the amazing part of this is that Cam Newton, the very mobile guy who is now leading the Carolina Panthers, top overall pick last year, was like a little slower than that. He was like a 4.7. So Andrew Luck is not a slow player.
No, that was that was pretty impressive. You know, because everybody had always talked about RG3's speed, but when Luck put up that number, I think a lot of people said, "Wow, you know, this guy is the total package."
He really looks like that. We're visiting with Doug Deacon, of course, from the Browns Radio Network on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Okay, now we get into your area of expertise, offensive line. A lot said about Matt Khalil, who is from Southern Cal, and a guy who did not disappoint at the combine physically, looked the part in every possible way, with strength and athleticism. 6'7", 306. Nice numbers for a guy that you want to see play offensive tackle in the NFL.
And hopefully the St. Louis Rams saw that. We would like them very much to take him at the second spot.
And but, push, yeah.
You know,
push Griffin down.
And, but the thing is, you know, we have a need for offensive line. We need to build some depth, especially at the right tackle position. And, you know, you see some of these guys – and, you know, everybody gets kind of involved in the strength part of it. And I always thought, I don't care how big and strong you are, if you can't move your feet, you're not worth a darn. And, you know, the footwork part of it, I think, is a part that, you know, a lot of scouts, you know, have to evaluate, because if you're, you know, you move like a glacier, you know, that's not going to help your quarterback.
I'm glad you brought that up, too, because there's a lot of talk about Mike Adams, the tackle from Ohio State. He measures out 6'7", 323, you know, big guy, big, long torso, long arms. I mean, he's a big man in every possible way, and I got to see him up close first down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl and then seeing him at the Combine. But the story about him from the Combine, unfortunately for him, was on the bench press. He did not rep out very well. And in fact, when I say rep out, he didn't have the numbers pushing 225 to the extent that other tackles have. And the conclusion is that, well, maybe there's an issue or a concern here about strength. What's your – because you brought up footwork, and the plus with Mike Adams is he moves really well. He's got pretty good feet.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things – you said he has long arms, and I think sometimes for guys with long arms, it's tougher to do the bench presses than it is with a guy with a little short, compact motion. But with that said, you know, I think, you know, strength is something you can build. I mean, every team's got a strength coach, and it's a matter of how much does the guy want to improve. And there'd be a tremendous upside when you start talking about a 320-pound guy to add strength to his body. So if he's, you know, I think this comes down to the personal interview and find out what kind of person he is, and is he willing to go that extra mile to become a better football player rather than just, you know, trying to make it on the God-given talents.
Right. And as you look at how it would apply to the Browns, because, you know, I think we can figure out that right tackle would be an area to address in one form or another. I mean, even if Tony Pachos is able to fight his way through and be there for part of or the start of the 2012 season, we'll see how that all plays out. But he was a guy that was plagued by some injuries and just was, you know, the whole story was just him fighting through. So you want to have that steady guy that you know can be there from the very start. And you certainly have to get younger at every position. I just wondered your thoughts about where you're looking for maybe a right tackle versus a left tackle, and that's locked down by Joe Thomas. Tackles are tackle. You want a guy who I guess can play both, but to start out with right tackle, that's mostly the power position, the run blocking spot.
Yeah, that's the power side, and I mean they always say most teams are right-handed.
Right.
But you know, the guy on the right side doesn't have to have the feet of the guy on the left side. Although I can remember Peter Hathazy telling me, you know, one time in a contract negotiation, we'd like to pay you this, this, and this, but you're only a left tackle. Those days have changed. But
that's the money spot.
That's the money spot, yeah. But, you know, I think, you know, if you don't have to play in space probably as much over there, because you can put, you know, a lot of teams will put the tight end over there to help it.
Right.
And, you know, I think you also have to give Tony Pachos credit. You know, his play last year was substandard to what, you know, he was accustomed to, but by the same token, you know, he gritted it out and lined up and played every Sunday for him when he could, because that's the kind of toughness that you want in an offensive lineman.
Sure.
And, you know, a healthy Tony Pachos and a young developmental tackle would be a nice thing to have.
And it seems like it's setting up for the Browns almost no matter what, how this plays out. When you look at them starting out with 9 picks, and then even if there is some kind of a trade, let's just assume that, you know, some deal is made to allow them to move up to get a Robert Griffin, then you're still likely looking at a package that remains of seven picks, you can hit these other areas. I mean, you don't necessarily hit them in the first round, but you can hit them high enough up where, you know, names on this list that are still pretty good football players, I think, at the tackle position. I don't know how deep yet it runs, and I think there's been varied opinions on that. But you probably can find somebody.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you see teams take, you know, when once a team gets good, they have that ability to build depth because their starters are there, and then
right.
the other guy is, you know, behind them for a period of time. And I think, you know, the key is to get the left tackle. Once you get the left tackle, then you get things in place. And then the Browns have a bonus because they have Steinbach coming back next year. So that's almost like another draft choice compared to what, you know, they had this year because he gives you, you know, a little bit more flexibility, I think, in the running game with his ability to pull and get outside. And, you know, Steiny is a tough, physical, old-school football player. So, you know, it really kind of squeezes down maybe that one position that you need to look at, and that would be, you know, the backup right tackle to make sure that, you know, you have somebody there in case some, you know, the Paschals can't make it.
Perfect. Doug, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And we'll catch up with you again after, I don't know, a couple more of your golf trips.
Sounds good to me.
He is.
Do I get golf balls for playing?
we'll find some somewhere. He is Doug Deacon from the Browns Radio Network joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily. It's driven by Liberty Ford. It's brought to you by Madden NFL 12. In stores now, EA Sports. It's in the game.